Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Jesus reminds us to watch for the signs of his return. Today, we will explore further what we are seeing in our times that line up with what signs he said would indicate the potential of the end and his return. We will also discuss the practical meaning of this as we watch and as a remnant prepare as he so leads. And now your host, Richard Case.
Good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday. This is part two with our good friends, Eric and Rabbi Ephraim from Israel. Last time we talked about Trump's trip and basically building economic gain for the United States. And they said, well, that's good for them. And it wasn't really a big slight of Israel to not show up in a meeting at this point. Eric raised up, he also didn't stop by and see Egypt. So he just had a purpose, and that's okay. But in our break, you were talking an interesting, kind of insight about the reforming of the Middle East, particularly with Saudi Arabia, and then the difference between that and Qatar, and then deeper involved is the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda and Iran. How do you see that sorting itself out with particularly what Saudi Arabia is up to and how that impacts Israel?
Okay, so let me start at some basics. From our view, and I think this is pretty objective, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamic Republic of Iran are just, Hamas has different angles on the same basic phenomenon, of basically Islamic fanaticism.
Yeah.
Okay? That we want to resurrect and bring back the 7th century when the caliphs ruled the world and conquered, it's ironic, across the United States college campuses they're claiming Israel is a colonialist enterprise. When in fact, if you know your history, Islam conquered the Middle East all the way from Spain through India and was not done by diplomacy. It was done using the sword. You either convert or you get killed. So it seems to me that that's a pretty colonialist, enterprise, that being said. So they're all basically names and different angles on the same basic phenomena. How do we resurrect the glory days of Islam that, went years ago? And we do that through Intifada Revolution, which is this language you hear on campuses. And the main sponsor of these things is Qatar and Iran, of course. And luckily for the West, the Gulf states, led primarily by Saudi Arabia, Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and see this as a problem, because they want to achieve a Middle East where its population can thrive, has a real economy, they can do things in the global economy for their population, and they get more and more rights to their population. Your listeners probably know that, maybe 10 years ago, women couldn't drive in Saudi Arabia and had to walk behind their husbands. Those rules have changed. There are a lot of other rules that are still in the Middle Ages, but slowly but surely, the leadership is trying to change things for their good of their population, which is to be respected. Qatar is financing. They financed all these terror organizations of one form or another, including the Muslim Brotherhood. They're the ones financing a lot of the programs in the university campuses that have led to all these problems that we're seeing today. And they send money. They got so much money, they send it everywhere and anywhere because they think they can buy their way into things. And unfortunately for us in the Western world, they've been successful at doing this. And so I was telling you during the break, this is an example. So to put this in perspective, when President Obama came to the Middle East, his first stop was Egypt. Why? He was on a diplomatic mission. He was talking about changing the world, Arab world in the Middle East for the better through democracy. Didn't work out so well in the end, but that was the vision he had. Well, Trump is here not on a commercial visit, not really a diplomatic vision. What he did with Syria, of course, is different, but most of the energy is being spent on signing deals for the benefit of the United States. And that's great. Stronger the United States is, the better off we think we are here in Israel, because It's one of our, you know, it is our best ally. So a strong United States is really important. Therefore, a good economy is important for us as well. So that's all great. But here we have Jordan, which is a very strong supporter and within the U.S. camp of conservative Arab governments. And they're being threatened, I think, on a daily basis. The government just imprisoned, I don't know how many people they found trying to fire rockets within Jordan. And those rockets were not targeted at Israel. They didn't have the range to reach across the border. They were targeted that was the Muslim Brotherhood. And they're the one, and they're getting sponsored by Qatar. And in the President Trump's eyes, Qatar's a great place, great country, you know, doing great things. Boy, we don't see it that way here, that's for sure. And we think Americans should think about it and wake up, that allowing a foreign government to buy its way and buy influence in the United States. First of all, there are laws that block that in terms of this. I mean, Steve Vitakoff, the leading negotiator on behalf of Trump, who has done, you know, pretty good job from an Israeli point of view so far. But the reality is he did a $600 million deal with the Qataris, who bought him out of a really bad real estate deal and saved his butt. Is he objective in these discussions and negotiations that are going on? I don't know.
How do you see that, Rabbi, in terms of, you know, and Denny mentioned this before about the prophetic, is that, you know, according to Scripture, you know, there becomes the world comes against Israel. Obviously, Middle East is a big piece of that. How do you see these disparate movements of, you know, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt becoming a little bit more, let's say, westernized and more economic and less political, but you've got these extremists that are operating, you know, Qatar and Syria and Hamas and Hezbollah, Iran. Those are seem like they're the Middle East has two different directions. Where do you see that playing out? How do you see that happening? And is this just a matter of time before they all get back to that same place where they come against Israel? You know, what's your perspective on that?
Well, it's hard to know. We do. It's definitely a glimmer of hope when we see these things going on in Saudi Arabia and other countries that are modernizing and they're moving in the right direction. But it's, you know, it's with a lot of caution, a lot of skepticism. These are super, for the most part, these countries are super unstable. So, for example, when Ehud Barak, when he was the prime minister in Israel, he almost made a major peace deal with Syria under the previous regime, where he would have given them the entire Golan Heights, right down to the Sea of Galilee. The Golan Heights, if you study a map here, it's like a super important strategic place. And when Syria did have that until 1967, the Six-Day War, they would shoot down at all the Jewish and Israeli cities right underneath it, and they could move their tanks in really, really quickly, which they almost did in 1973, in the Yom Kippur War. And Ehud Barak thought, let's make peace. And let's give them all of this territory back. And then a few years later, you know, there's a revolution. And you don't know who's going to come in and take the place. And Egypt has a revolution. And now the Muslim Brotherhood move in. So it's super, super unstable. The Middle East, every single country is unstable. And it's been like that since the dawn of Islam. Every single 100, 200 years, there's a different Islamic regime that gets overthrown from the previous one in every single country in the entire Middle East. So it's hard to have much confidence and certainly to give up strategic assets to these places. And in terms of prophecies, yeah, you know, the prophecies do say that in the end of times, all the nations of the world will rise up and try and destroy us. And that seemed really unrealistic and a tad fictional a little while ago. But it's, you know, we don't have many friends out there, many friends. And also, if you look at it and it's like, it's so unreasonable and so illogical. Like Eric mentioned about the Islamic colonialism, that they were this colonial empire just coming to conquer not only Israel, but the entire Middle East and Turkey and Hungary and Spain and North Africa. They just came into all these countries as an Islamic caliphate to take over. There's nothing more colonialistic than that. And yet Israel, which is the indigenous population And like, you don't have to be a history buff to know. I mean, you've got the New Testament and the Old Testament, and like, you don't have to be a history buff to know that Israel has had a long history of Jews in this country. Despite the obviousness of that fact, we are the ones who are accused, you know, by university professors and rallies at universities that we are the colonialist conquerors. It just makes no sense. And then you get to, you know, everything they accuse us of. And when I say they, it's like my brother's son graduated from NYU today, and someone sent me a video from one of the valedictorian speech at one of the schools, and he chose to dedicate his speech to calling out the genocide that has happened, that Israel is doing against Palestine. Even more worrisome than that was the ovation. As soon as he opened his mouth, the crowd went wild, cheering him on, so excited, so happy. These are, you know, the whole entire school graduating at NYU thinks that Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians. Wow. Now, words have meaning, words have definitions, and everything that they accuse us of is exactly what they have done. Yet, people do not get it. And, you know, they committed this most absurd, barbaric act of genocide against us on October 7th, and it's part of a long, long history of them trying to wipe out the entire Jewish nation in Israel. And we try and defend ourselves, and they, with them buried under civilians, these are not hard facts to uncover, and yet entire university populations do not get it and think we're doing genocide. No one mentions that the Palestinians have an apartheid state, and everyone assumes that if there ever is a Palestine, it's a Palestinian state. Of course, all the Jews have to be removed. Why? Why are we so intent on creating an apartheid Palestinian state and forcing Israel to give up land, which is a complete democracy where Arabs have full rights? So everything they accuse us of is what they're doing, and people just cannot get it. So why am I bringing all that up? Is because that's part of the prophecies, is that anti-Semitism and hatred of Jews is not reasonable. It is illogical. It's insane. It makes no sense. There's just like this like thing, this supernatural that we have to get the Jews. The Jews are like this scary thing, and makes no sense at all. But that's what the prophecies from 3,000 years ago in the Torah say: the Jews will be hated more than any other nation, despite the fact that our whole goal is to bring goodness and godliness and righteousness and spirituality to the world.
Yeah. So, yeah. Exactly right. And when you think about that, with Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt becoming, let's say, more friendly toward Israel, obviously not purely aligned with Israel, but a little bit more friendly. Do you have any thoughts about, you know, what would occur to turn that back since they join this opposition to Israel? And right now, is it fair to say that there's not a strong opposition from those countries at the moment? But what would you see would twist that back to where they would become again more opposed to Israel?
Well, just Jordan's, you know, they do surveys of anti-Semitism in various different countries. You know, most countries don't do so well on the anti-Semitism survey. The Palestinian territories in Gaza have the highest level of it. It's like 98% or something like that of people have terrible negative views of Jews. But second to that is Jordan.
Really?
And despite the fact that we have a peace treaty with Jordan, because, and this is quite common, you know, we have a strategic interest, that they have a strategic interest in having peace with us. Economically, Israel has rescued the Jordanian regime, the king and his regime, on a couple of occasions, that he would have been assassinated and overthrown if it wasn't for Israel saving. The government sees a benefit, but they don't mind that their population is educated to hate the Jews. Things can change in a second, and of course, violent revolutions and overturning the government and throwing out the present dictator. You know, they're all dictatorships, so throwing out this dictator and replacing him with another dictator is not so impossible to imagine.
Sure.
So things can change real quick, which is why Israel is, you know, spends such a huge amount of money on security. We don't know what tomorrow will bring.
Yeah.
And we certainly can't rely on anybody else for our security. And we're in a tough neighborhood.
Eric, you have any thoughts on that?
Well, look, I don't think
love is the right word when you describe a relationship between Saudi Arabia, potentially, and Israel, or the United Arab Emirates and Israel, or Bahrain. I would say respect. These countries have stepped, you know, from the side, seen how, despite all the difficulties that Israel's had to deal with, how it has prospered in such terrible and difficult situations. Saudi Arabia is committing huge resources to modernize its country. It has a program that the heir apparent, Bin Salman, has deemed like the 2030 project. And that project entails huge investments in Saudi Arabia. They're going to build a scuba diver. So I've been diving in Egypt at least three times in down near Ras Mohammed on the Sinai Peninsula. I dove there once when it was part of Israel years ago. And then you go across the Red Sea and you're the Straits of Tehran, diving there, and with Saudi Arabia. Well, Saudi Arabia's turned that whole area into a major resort. They want to attract tourism as a way of diversifying their economy, which is great. I mean, you know, salute to them. It's a good development. I hope it works out for them economically, and it'd be a great place. Maybe one day I'll go diving there. I don't know. But you don't develop these projects and invest in this economy if you think tomorrow, you know, there's going to be a revolution or things are going to blow up. And so, and if the more they and their neighbors invest in projects like this, the more they have to lose in the event of a war with Israel. Because Israel will blow these things up if they can. So this is all good for the region, and I hope that I wish them success. And I think that they realize they need Israel for the success, and I think they're right. I think Israel could help them a lot. I mean, I've gone to lectures here in Israel where people talk about one day Israeli startup companies listing themselves before the NASDAQ on some exchange in the Gulf, you know, to raise capital. I can see how that can happen, not this year, not next year, but in the future that could easily happen,
yeah.
Which would be good for the region.
Interesting.
And it would be good for the United States, I think, as long as these nations continue on the path they're on. But, you know, you just never know here. The Shah of Iran was doing very similar projects to what we're seeing in Saudi Arabia today. And during the Carter administration, when Carter was espousing human rights and trying to push the Shah to respect the human rights of its population, as a byproduct of all that, the guy got overthrown, and in comes this terrible Islamic Republic being run by a fanatic. Will that happen in Saudi Arabia? I can't envision it today, but just don't know.
When we talk about, coming back to Iran, we know that, they're developing nuclear capability for a bomb. Trump has stated, at least what we hear, is that he's not going to allow them to do that. But also, Israel is kind of in the wings waiting, I guess, for something. What do you guys hear about? What are they waiting for, Israel, I'm talking about? And if they don't get... If Trump isn't successful in shutting that down, what will Israel do?
Well, my view is that I don't think Trump will be successful in shutting it down, because there's no agreement I can envision he could sign that would be adhered to and abided by in this Islamic Republic.
Yeah.
They'll cheat where they can, with underground facilities doing what they can. If I read between the lines correctly, it looks like they're targeting a deal which limits the percentage of uranium enrichment, quote-unquote, Iran is allowed to do. Now, once again, the amount, the enrichment level you need for a civilian nuclear power reactor is in the order of 3%. When they say percent, uranium has multiple isotopes. And when you enrich it, you're eliminating, favoring one isotope or the other. And I think it's uranium-238 that's needed to make the bomb.
Yeah.
The pervasive element is uranium-235. So... But what happens if Trump reads, okay, well, you can agree to 15%. That's okay. That's not enough for a bomb. I can easily see, given the rhetoric I'm hearing in the press and so on, him agreeing to that. And then he can turn to Netanyahu and say, well, see, I've stopped them from the bomb. They can't build a bomb unless it goes up to like 90%. 90% is a level for a bomb. So they've agreed not to do it. And we can inspect them whenever we can. And then if that's what happened, Netanyahu will have a conniption. Because he knows, he's proven that they lie. But there's nothing, I don't see what Israel can do at this stage about it.
Many of us do not understand why Israel has not taken action until now. Because it's been sort of on the agenda for many years. And although under Biden, it was definitely more complicated whether we would have the support of the United States. And I think that most people assumed that under Trump, we would be able to, and perhaps even with American cooperation, and certainly their support, we would be able to do whatever was necessary to destroy their capabilities. So this is all a very big turnaround for us. And it looks like we're heading back to the same territory as, you know, Biden, which was just making a deal which is not worth the paper that it's written on.
But let me come back to a point that I think I alluded to in the previous session that I think really needs emphasis. From what I've been able to read, and I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, there are many former Iranian Jews who now live in Israel, and some of them are a part of think tanks here in Israel because they speak Farsi, they have contacts still in Iran, they're able to understand what's really going on within the population in Iran. And from what I've listened to and heard, things in Iran are so dire, people are selling their organs for money. That just gives you an idea how desperate people are in Iran today. The population growth is not negative, but you know, I think they say 2.1 births per childbearing age woman is the right number to sustain a population. They're in like 1.3 or 1.4, they're among the lowest. People have very little hope. People don't have drinking water. They're drinking polluted water to survive. People, the real has been in total freefall, you know, for ages now. I just read where they changed the number of digits on the back end to something like they knocked off 3 zeros off of their exchange rate, or something like that, a million. Their inflation rate's more than like 70% a year. So, and they're doing all this while funding Hezbollah. I mean, where does Hezbollah get its money from? I'm not sure how much they're funding Hamas. I think most of their money comes from Qatar. But they're funding the Houthis. They're investing in missiles and rockets. And these are not defensive weapons. These are offensive weapons. So I can understand how a country in the Middle East wants to invest in defensive capabilities because of the instability around here. But why would they? The only reason they would invest in offensive weapons is to be an antagonist in the region. And they're doing all this at the expense of their population. So they're very vulnerable, and they know it. And I guarantee you, the U.S. intelligence is not stupid. The CIA has to have filed numerous reports with the federal government documenting everything I just told you. Because if we know it, I'm sure the CIA knows it.
Yeah. When you think about that, then, is Iran going to collapse? I mean, when you get to that point, doesn't the country and the government collapse, one? And then two, when will Israel do a military action? Because they can't literally allow that to develop where they really have a bomb that can be used against Israel.
Up until, I don't know, a couple of years ago, the Israeli Air Force's position was, we don't have the capability and armaments to be able to knock out Fordo. These facilities are buried, you know, 100, I should put it in feet, you know, 200 feet or so below the Earth's surface. They just didn't have the bunker busting bombs needed. But when they assassinated Nasrallah, he was in a similar bunker, just about as deep. So the Israeli Air Force has changed its position and says, no, we can do this. Where we need the U.S. help is when Iran would inevitably retaliate with launching ballistic missiles, we would need help from CENTCOM in taking them out on their way to Israel.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what I think. That's the official sort of position in the public domain. I'm not sure what's going on behind closed doors, but publicly been sort of talked about here in Israel about taking out their facilities. There's a feeling I just don't know enough that if you weaken the regime enough, that the Persian people themselves are quite innovative. They're quite creative. They have a long history. They're a civilization in their own right, not tribal. And they're very proud of their history. It's a very ancient history. And so there's a feeling, I'm not sure how true it is, that at some point, if the regime is weakened enough, the population can rise up and there's regime change, okay? I don't know. Historically, there haven't been many regime changes without a strong leader. Let's say Nelson Mandela type of a person, or even one who's more violent. Take it over, you know, maybe like a Vladimir Lenin or something that doesn't mind violence. But I don't know what the probability is the population could overthrow the current government. But I think the view here in Israel is that that's something we would want to encourage.
Rabbi, any other thoughts for you have on that perspective, on any military action that Israel will take, and do they sense that the Iranian is collapsing or just is this more normal stuff?
Yeah, I actually toured in Israel recently with a guy whose his family is from Iran, and he was born in Iran. And he's the passion with which these people hate the present regime is unbelievable. And and he was reiterating this, so that a very significant population within Iran equally hates, you know, the Ayatollahs and the Islamic fundamentalist regime, and would love to replace it something more Western and democratic, or at least open. But it's so heavy-handed and evil, they can't. They just don't have a way of creating that type of change. Or at least they don't see it. But there's a lot of support for it from people that used to be from there. It seems like it's very vulnerable. So the Western countries are often, you know, and Israel's made this mistake as well, but just when they're on the bridge, on the brink of so weakened that change could happen for the better, someone swoops in and saves them. Israel did that with the PLO. When the PLO was about to be destroyed, we saved them with the Oslo Accords, and that could be what Trump is inadvertently doing here with Iran.
Yeah. Do you, does the population think about support and expect military action against the nuclear capability?
I think the Israel population would be very supportive of it, even knowing that we might pay a heavy price in terms of the retaliation. But we know that this is an existential problem that is probably not going to go away with diplomacy, because they're just going to lie and break any type of agreement. So Israel, pretty much right across the board, certainly I think every political party except the Arab political parties would be in support of military action, and the population is willing to.
Yeah, oh, watch that. Well, thank you so much for all your input. It's fascinating, particularly as you think about the Middle East and Saudi Arabia and all that's going on there, and Iran, and we'll be watching it to see what happens. Obviously, Trump is active in attempting to negotiate, but like you say, Iran doesn't honor their agreement. So what's he going to do about that? And I know Israel isn't going to allow them to develop the bomb, so something's got to happen, I would assume. So you guys will, you know, keep track of that, and we'll process this. So thank you so much for your input and your insight and your experiences. And we're privileged, you know, to have you guys. And we just love hearing you, and look forward to more. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, guys. You guys are truly such a blessing, just to bring some truth and light in things that are going on in the world right now. And even as you both have described, there is a lot of deception out there. And there's what is going on is a spiritual element where good is being called evil and evil is being called good. And we see it played out, and we just appreciate you guys bringing things to light for us to see and for our listeners to see and be aware of and just to keep tabs on. So thank you for your time and effort in that. And listeners, if you have questions, be sure to send them in to us at questions@abideministries.com, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
Yep, we'll see you then.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments, and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.